You're listening to The Sound Off. The Sound Off. With the Solomonster. Solomonster.
What in the world makes you think that you can do what I couldn't? And to put it in words you can understand, John Cena, the People's Champ is here!
This is a special edition of the Sound Off, episode 153, here on SCScoops.com for Tuesday, March 29th, 2011. I am the Solomonster. Yes, it is a rare weekday edition of the podcast here during WrestleMania season, the day after the go-home edition of Monday Night Raw. 6 days away, well, now 5 days away, I guess, from WrestleMania 27 coming up this weekend. And today's also a special day for me because it was on this exact date 12 years ago, in fact. It was March 29, 1999, that Raw came to what I believe would have been the Continental Airlines Arena, the Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey. I hope that's where it was. It could have been the Nassau Coliseum. For a Raw show the night after WrestleMania 15. And I was there that night and have some memories from the show. I know there was a Triple H X-Pac match. This was, of course, the night after WrestleMania when Triple H turned on X-Pac and joined the corporation. And Goldust won his third Intercontinental title from Jesse James on that night. So, special night, 12 years ago. And 12 years later, here I am to talk about Raw from last night, what was a pretty damn good little show. As we head into the pay-per-view coming up this Sunday, we're going to get to a bunch of thoughts on Raw, and don't think that I forgot, because on the show that I did this past weekend, episode 152, I did not include my annual WrestleMania predictions. Well, that's going to come here on the show tonight, so fear not. That will be coming up a little bit later. But first, a couple of notes here before we get to all that. Chris Jericho, Dancing with the Stars last night, he kicked all kinds of ass, tied for first place, ranked fourth overall for the past 2 weeks, and actually, as I am recording this, the Elimination Show is going to be airing, in about 20 minutes or so, and I would say that Jericho's spot is pretty much safe on the show, so I don't think he has to worry about being kicked off tonight. So if you want to vote for Chris Jericho going forward, I assume this phone number does not change, and I don't know if voting is open 24 hours or not. But for the benefit of those of you who would like to vote for Y2J, you can do so by calling 1-800-868-3409. That's 1-800-868-3409. Or you can text the word VOTE to 3409. So good for Jericho. I caught his segment. They actually aired it before Raw went on the air last night, so thumbs up to ABC for that. And he did pretty good for himself. And on the flip side of that, somebody who did not do pretty good for themselves today, Dixie Carter, the president of TNA Wrestling. Dixie. Now, basically, the long and short of it is Dixie Carter's Twitter page, which I think by last count had something like 84 or 85,000 followers, had yet to be verified, even though that page had been set up for quite some time now. And typically when WWE will set up a Twitter page for one of their personalities, that shit gets verified very quickly. So this whole Twitter verification system for famous people is a mystery to me, even after all this time. But the one thing that is not a mystery is that you are not allowed to post a background image, as Dixie had done, or some other brainiac at TNA had done for her, with a Twitter verified image transposed over it. That is a no-no. That's like using a virtual fake ID. And how embarrassing that the president of TNA Wrestling got caught with a fake ID. Only, in this case, it's unfortunate that her parents won't punish her by taking away her allowance, but that's a story for a different day. So, as of last check, the page is still down. I'm sure at some point it will be restored, although I have to say, it would be hilarious if she, in fact, was not able to get that page restored, and in a couple of days, she popped up on Twitter as TNA Dixie 1, or something to that effect. That would be hilarious for all the wrong reasons. So, had to get that little dig into TNA. They had to make news, and unfortunately, it's quite an embarrassing situation for them, but what the hell are you going to do? Before we get to Monday Night Raw, I just want to mention one thing. I mentioned this for the first time this weekend on episode 152 of the Sound Off, broke the news, if you will, that yours truly, the Solemn Monster, will be anchoring live WrestleMania coverage on SCScoops.com this Sunday, beginning at 7 Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Live coverage during WrestleMania for those of you who are watching WrestleMania at home, or perhaps are not, or cannot. You can certainly head over to SCScoops, and there will be play-by-play results after each match, mixed in with perhaps some of my thoughts during the show. This is the first time we're doing this. Webmaster Mike, Noah Mark, they have the luxury of traveling to Atlanta later this week to be part of the festivities. They will be updating all of us and tweeting photos and things of that nature all throughout the weekend. So it's not just Sunday. You should keep checking SC Scoops all weekend. But for those of you who want live coverage of the pay-per-view, you got me this Sunday, 7 Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Look forward to seeing you all there. Now, Monday Night Raw. Last night from Chicago, the Allstate Arena sold out, as Gorilla Monsoon would say if he were still alive, God rest his soul. They were hanging from the rafters. And indeed, every seat apparently was sold out last night. This show was sold out for a couple of weeks. And you could probably give a lot of credit to The Rock. You can give a lot of credit to things just generally heating up around WrestleMania season. But this feels a little bit different than even last year. You have The Rock, you've got Stone Cold, you've got Undertaker and Triple H coming back for their little thing. You've got Trish Stratus, although Trish has meant next to nothing, unfortunately, since she's come back. Like I said before, I really liked this show last night. It wasn't perfect, but as a go-home show that is intended to build interest in WrestleMania, to give a baseball analogy, I think they hit a double. Not a home run, but a double. And they drove in a few runs in the process. Obviously, I don't disagree with the general consensus that the best segment on the entire show involved Triple H, The Undertaker, and the returning Shawn Michaels. They had one hell of a segment, and I want to kind of go through this show in some sort of sequential order, so I'll get to that in a little bit. The end of the show I thought was also really good. I might have handled things a little bit differently, but there's no doubt that the first bit of physicality between John Cena and The Rock, they just had the crowd in the palm of their hands. And this was definitely a pro-Rock crowd. Now, John Cena has gotten some pretty negative reactions from Chicago crowds in the past, most notably WrestleMania 22. He was in the main event against Triple H back in 2006 and was basically booed out of the building. And I'll never forget that infamous scene at the end of that match when Cena made Triple H tap out to the STF, and they panned into the crowd to this one poor bastard in the audience, this guy wearing glasses, and he had this look on his face like he could not believe what he had just seen. So these Chicago fans, none too fond of John Cena, and we'll get to all that in a second. Let's take this from the top here. CM Punk started the show last night. Of course, he is a Chicago native. And although it was difficult to do, he did get the Chicago crowd to boo him. It didn't last very long, but I give him a lot of credit because that's not an easy thing to do. He is beloved in that city. And they did boo him, though, during the course of this segment. He cut a promo on Randy Orton. Orton eventually came out. And the thing I like about this is compared to all the other big matches that they're promoting, and again, in terms of, quote, big matches, Cena and, or rather, Orton and Punk, isn't even in the top four. I mean, it's probably the fifth, maybe best promoted or quote, biggest match on the pay-per-view. But it could be a sleeper. I mean, you've got two guys in there that are pretty good wrestlers. Punk is awesome. Orton is Orton. Orton can be very good, obviously. He can be a little slow in there, a little methodical. But the build to this match has been very basic, but that's a good thing in this case because this is not a main event match on the show. So you can only do so much without, you can't have these two guys overshadow everything else that's going on. And there's no way they're going to be able to overshadow The Rock and even Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, which has had the best build for any match on the entire pay-per-view. So this started weeks ago, Punk leading the new Nexus, Orton basically picking off members of the Nexus one by one, week by week, punting them back to Florida. And CM Punk is the last man standing. So what do you do at this point? Punk took the wrench to Orton's his knee a couple of weeks ago. The whole thing with the bus and the phony wife, we won't get into that. So Orton, of course, had a He had a brace on his leg. He limped down to the ring, beat up Punk, went to punt him, and could not deliver the punt. His leg was gravely hurting him, and Punk was outside the ring, slid back in, took advantage of Orton, gave him the GTS, left him laying. Orton did cut a little bit of a promo backstage later on in the show, basically saying he'll be at WrestleMania. The question isn't whether or not he will be there. The question is whether or not CM Punk will be able to make it out of WrestleMania. So, again, pretty basic stuff compared to everything else on the show, but I like it. You know, again, this match is one of those matches that has the potential to really surprise a lot of people. It's not the most well-featured match on the show, but I think it'll do just fine. We had Edge and Christian reuniting for the first time in 6 years. Now, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, Edge and Christian were supposed to reunite for a tag match against The Core for the tag team titles on SmackDown. And WWE changed their minds. They did not do that match. In fact, it was they did the same thing this week in that I think they were billing a false count anywhere match, at least on the website, at one point between Del Rio and Christian for SmackDown, which they taped last night as well, and that match didn't happen either. So a lot of minds being changed at the last minute here. But Edge and Christian, they claimed it was the first time in 6 years reunited in a tag match on Raw. In fact, that is true. The last time the two of them teamed together on Raw was March 21st, 2005, where the two of them defeated Chris Jericho and Shelton Benjamin. So in this match, I like that they kept Edge away from Del Rio. We got a pretty good little match for what it was. Alberto attacked Christian with the armbar on the outside after the match. Edge ran him off, came back to help Christian. Del Rio came back out like a great heel, beat up Edge, put him in the armbar. So basically, they did not go with the idea of inserting Christian into this thing to make it a triple threat at WrestleMania, which is sad. I don't think the match necessarily needed that. And I'm not the biggest fan, generally speaking, of triple threat matches. It would have been cool for Christian to just kind of get in on the match, and you know, he deserves it. But in the graphic they put up on TV for the match, they put Christian in Edge's corner. He was kind of in the background in the graphic. So that tells me he will be in Edge's corner, not wrestling, at WrestleMania. And it looks like they might be building, perhaps, to a Christian heel turn. At least by Wrestling Logic 101, you would think somebody is turning on somebody at some point. So perhaps it won't happen at WrestleMania, or perhaps it will. Can go either way with this. The problem that I see with this is that if Del Rio is going to win the championship, and to me there's no doubt that he's leaving WrestleMania with the title, you know, you'll have the one or two rematches he can do post-WrestleMania with Edge, but at some point he's got to move on to a new challenger. And as of right now, you've got Rey Mysterio, although he's already feuded with Del Rio. You've got Big Show, I suppose. Kane, I guess, now is a babyface. Neither one of those feuds, by the way, appeal to me. Christian would be the most logical choice. He has a couple of TV wins over the last couple of weeks over Del Rio. So if he wins the title at WrestleMania, Christian, you would assume, would make for a fine choice as number one contender. Now, if he goes heel at WrestleMania and turns on Edge, you know, where does that leave Del Rio in terms of who he defends the championship against, unless they're perhaps going to do a triple threat at the next pay-per-view? I don't know. But obviously, Christian is going to play a factor in this match. Brodus Clay will be in Alberto Del Rio's corner at the pay-per-view, so we'll see where they go with that. I was saddened to see Santino and Kozlov, well, really more Kozlov, I guess, getting plugged into WrestleMania as partners for Kane and the Big Show over somebody like Kofi Kingston, who just lost the Intercontinental title to Wade Barrett. And so, to me, it would make far more sense for him to be a participant in that match at WrestleMania than Vladimir Kozlov. You know, on top of that, in this match here that they had on Raw last night, the babyfaces went over clean. And, you know, we even got some goofy comedy at the end, replete with Kane. Yes, Kane, pantomiming the Santino trombone after the match. Now, yeah, I could talk about how stupid this felt after sitting through months and months and months of serious Kane on SmackDown as the World Heavyweight Champion. But you know what? The guy's Teflon, as far as I'm concerned. They could do pretty much anything they want to with him, and people are going to cheer him no matter what. Kane and Big Show are perfect, by the way, as tag team partners, and I'll tell you why. I cannot think of two people on the active roster that have had the kind of tenure that these guys have had. that have had as many babyface and heel turns as Kane and Big Show, to the point where I've completely lost track. I mean, I could not tell you with any sense of great accuracy how many times in the last 12 years that he's been in the company, the Big Show has turned. You know, to the point where it doesn't even matter. And Kane is officially in that category now. You know, for months, he was the creepy, evil, sadistic heel with the creepy music in the background every time he would cut those 15-minute-long promos. And now, all of a sudden, he's, I guess, you know, he's being played for comedy again. Now, in my defense, before people get on me for not having a sense of humor, I have a fantastic sense of humor. But even when they had Kane do the Spinneroonie for the first time back in 2002, I remember that show. Kane had been out for a couple of months. He was injured. It was Raw, Madison Square Garden. The Un-Americans were in the ring for a segment. They were threatening to blowtorch, I think, the American flag. And after weeks of vignettes teasing his comeback, Kane finally returned. Got a big pop from the crowd. This is when he was wearing the half mask. And, you know, Booker T was there. I think Goldust was there. And they got him to do the Spinneroonie. They called it the Kane-a-Rooney, which the crowd popped huge for. And again, I suppose it was funny, but I hated that with a passion as well. It's just, you know, at least I'm consistent in feeling that Kane is better off not being treated as a comedy character. I like Kane. I mean, I've always had a liking for the Kane character. A lot of you do too, based on the feedback that I used to get for this guy, and still do, in fact. So it's just a personal thing, you know? It didn't mean anything, but I wish Kane wouldn't do stupid stuff like that. So then we got the Undertaker Triple H Shawn Michaels segment. And it took Shawn Michaels to get the job done, but I'll be goddamn, they finally got me excited for this match. Within the last 2 or 3 days, I did another podcast, and I talked about how I could not care less about this Undertaker-Triple H match. You know, it's being positioned as one of the top matches, if not the main event, on the show at WrestleMania. It's probably going to go on last. Again, that could change, but this is being built as the feature attraction, other than The Rock, at WrestleMania. Undertaker Triple H, who is the last outlaw? The streak, will it be broken? Will it be 18-1 or will it be 19-0? The streak overshadows everything. And these guys have pretty much had the run of the show as far as having full control over their angle. Very little input from Vince McMahon and the creative team. These guys have done nothing but come out here week after week and cut one promo after another. And that would be fine if they said something different. And my problem with this up until last night was, you know, 1 week Triple H would come out and would cut a promo. Then The Undertaker would come out on SmackDown and would cut a promo. Then Triple H would come out on SmackDown and cut a promo. And so on and so forth. And the shit that they were talking about was the same stuff over and over and over again. So, to me, they really had to come out here last night and do something different. They had to compel me, as a viewer, to get excited for this match. And like I said, my hat's off to both these guys because they were able to get me excited. Now, Shawn Michaels had a lot to do with that. He came out. Crowd loved him. I mean, the crowd gave him as big a reaction, I think, as anybody, even The Rock, got all night last night. They were very happy to see him. And, you know, he did a little promo of his own, and then he had a little bit of a turn there. It looked like he was, you know, he was kind of siding with his buddy, Triple H, and then he kind of turned to Hunter and basically said, what makes you think that you can do what I couldn't? You know, what makes you think that you could beat this guy when I lost 2 years in a row? I mean, hell, I got retired by this guy. So I thought that was a nice little twist. And then Triple H said, well, you know, your problem is that you went soft. You know, you were Mr. WrestleMania. You didn't have to win at WrestleMania to be the showstopper and to steal the show, and I have to win. And what I thought was interesting about this segment was the part where Triple H told about this supposed pact that he had made a couple of years ago with Shawn Michaels, where both guys agreed to be completely honest with the other one if either one of those guys ever got to the point where they were embarrassing themselves and it was time to hang it up. And Triple H essentially said that The Undertaker's time is up. It's time for him to call it quits. And when the camera showed Undertaker's face, he almost looked sad. And it's kind of funny because, again, Undertaker has been through hell. He has been to hell and back. Obviously, this whole shoulder injury, it's very well documented. He's not going to be 100% going into this match at the pay-per-view. You know, the whole thing, when they went to operate on the shoulder, they found that the damage was more extensive than originally thought. His shoulder is damaged enough that it will never again be 100%. He will never again have full range of motion in that shoulder. That's pretty serious stuff. This is on top of all the other injuries that The Undertaker has sustained over the years. Legitimate injuries. He's you know, he's got two hips that are probably going to have to be replaced at some point. Knee injuries, and just this guy has really, he's been a warrior over the years. And when Triple H was talking about all those years ago when he wore a flak jacket to the ring to to kind of shield some broken ribs, and when his face got crushed, I assume when he said that he was referencing the orbital bone injury that Undertaker sustained back in 95 when King Mabel at the time, or Viscera, for those of you who are newer fans. I think he gave Undertaker a leg drop. It was on Raw, and he was a little too stiff with that leg drop, and he actually cracked Undertaker's orbital bone, and that is a shitty, shitty injury. Ironically, Undertaker suffered the same injury at the hands of Rey Mysterio last year, when Rey Mysterio, I think maybe it was his knee brace or something, clipped Undertaker in the face and cracked his orbital bone. Anyway, that was the period back in 95 when Undertaker, he did not take any time off. In fact, he was on TV for about 2 or 3 months wearing this very bizarre-looking Phantom of the Opera-style mask, this apparatus on his face. And so, as a longtime fan who remembers that, I really appreciate that sort of consistency. And I can see where a lot of newer fans, or just casual fans who don't, you know, they don't give a shit about little things like that. It wouldn't mean much to them. But that made the promo even more special to me, because I remember that. And it does prove that The Undertaker is one tough SOB. So Triple H did a phenomenal job in this promo. There was one point in the promo where you could tell he kind of fucked up, but he caught himself. And I just thought this whole thing was fantastic. And then when Undertaker is berating Shawn Michaels, and Shawn has this look on his face like his dog just died, and he goes to super kick the Undertaker, and the Undertaker catches his foot, goes to give him a choke slam. Triple H breaks it up. Shawn backs up into the corner. He's got this despondent look on his face, and Triple H is talking to the Undertaker. He's got his back turned to Shawn Michaels, and Triple H says, "Hey, Shawn, tell him why I'm going to beat you, or tell him why I'm going to beat him at WrestleMania. Tell him why the streak is going to end." And Shawn doesn't say anything. And Triple H is basically trying to, you know, to tell him, hey, what, you know, tell him what's wrong. And Shawn just leaves. And Shawn Michaels, basically, you can see him mouth the words, "You can't win. You can't win. I'm sorry," he says. So this was just all around a total thumbs up segment. I love the hell out of this. And I take back everything I said on the last Sound Off. You know, they really came through with flying colors here. I am genuinely interested in seeing this match now. The one thing I will say is, one thing I did predict on the last show this past weekend, and I believe it even more so now, that Shawn Michaels will have some sort of involvement in this match. And again, the way that I see this going down, or the way that I would do it if I were in control of putting this match together, is you have this, at least this one spot later on in the match where Shawn Michaels, you know, if he's already at ringside, he comes into the ring. If he's not at ringside, then he sprints down to the ring and comes in. Perhaps for a moment he teases whether or not he's going to attack Triple H or The Undertaker, but ultimately he kicks Undertaker in the face. Undertaker eats a super kick, and Triple H slowly crawls over to cover the Undertaker, and perhaps the ref, who had been bumped earlier, is now coming to and crawls over for what would probably be the most dramatic near fall of that entire match. I mean, to me, that's the key spot in that match at WrestleMania, if Shawn Michaels is going to be involved. And after this segment, to me, not that he has to be, but I almost think it would be foolish for anybody to think that he would not be involved in this match in some capacity. So I loved this segment. To me, by the way, you know, if they do that spot, it's reminiscent to me of the WrestleMania 18 match where Undertaker fought Ric Flair. You may remember there's one spot in that match towards the end where Arn Anderson comes out of nowhere. It was perfectly timed. Undertaker, I think, was coming off the ropes. Arn Anderson just slid into the ring out of nowhere and caught Undertaker with one of his patented spine busters. Got a big pop. I don't know if Ric Flair immediately went for a cover or what happened. It was probably a near fall, but this would be reminiscent of that. I mean, I think that's a really cool spot that I remember all these years later, and I think it would work here, too. Then we have Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole. Now, I do have one thing to rant about here. What the fuck are they thinking? Changing Jerry Lawler's music 1 week before WrestleMania. I mean, are they serious? Why? Why do they do this? They have a pattern of doing this. They did this with Bret Hart. And again, I like Bret Hart's new music. It's a minor thing. Theme music, it's a minor thing to quibble about. But when Bret Hart returned to Raw last January, they built up his return. He came out. That initial guitar riff hit. Everybody got excited. And it was a remixed version of the theme music, of his iconic theme music. And it really took me out of the moment. Now, eventually I got used to it. I actually came to like his theme music. The point is, Lawler is associated with that royal theme song. In fact, it's the same goddamn theme song they've used for every single king, I think, in the history of WWE. Going back to Harley Race, King Haku. I mean, they've had that music in their library for 25-plus years. And they've always used it for Jerry Lawler. I mean, since he first came into the company. And the week before WrestleMania, he comes down for a match against Jack Swagger, and the music is completely different. I mean, the first fucking thing I thought when he came out and I heard that music was, this is William Regal's music. Why would they do that? Don't do that. Hopefully they ditch that, and at WrestleMania, he comes down to his usual theme song. It's a minor thing, but it just pisses me off. I don't know why they feel they have to update everything, you know? They did it with The Rock. You know, when The Rock came back last month, his music was a little bit different. Again, I'm completely fine with that. His music is cool, but in this case, this song just didn't work. It sucked, and they need to go back to his old theme music. So, step off my soapbox now. So, this supposed match with him and Swagger really wasn't much of a match at all. It was pretty much a throwaway. Lawler attacked Swagger outside the ring with a steel chair, went after Michael Cole in the coal mine. Cole splashed a drink, some soda, in Lawler's face, and then taunted him to end the segment. A little bit of a letdown. I was hoping we'd get an awesome King promo, perhaps, selling how much this Mania match means to him, which is a shoot, by the way. Again, Lawler has always wanted a match at WrestleMania, and now he has that match. And there is... I should say this. There's very few people left in wrestling, especially from the old school, who can cut a promo and can sell something like Jerry Lawler. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. And I didn't grow up in Memphis. I didn't grow up having access at the time when I was younger to Memphis television. So, you know, my knowledge of the King did not sprout until my teenage years, when I first was able to see some old-school Lawler footage, and you can find a ton of it now on YouTube, obviously, but the guy is great. You don't need me to tell you that, and I just think it was a mistake to not give him even 5 minutes on the microphone to just look at the crowd, and or just look at Michael Cole, even, and just cut a really intense promo selling how much the match meant to him and just basically telling us what he's going to do, all the different ways that he's going to torture and abuse Michael Cole at WrestleMania. Although, apparently, Lawler does get to cut a promo on SmackDown this week, so I guess we'll have to just see how that goes. We had Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler beating Daniel Bryan and John Morrison after Sheamus pinned Bryan with a razor's edge. I'm not sure why you would do that 6 days before WrestleMania, unless Bryan is getting the title back, but that seems unlikely since he just dropped it. We had a tape skit that was filmed last week on the Jersey Shore at a bar with Trish Stratus and Snooki brawling with Lay Cool. This was horrendous beyond words. They did a segment years ago on Raw where Mark Henry took China out to a bar on a date. That was so much better than this. I mean, like, night and day. So, these things can be good, but this was not. This was just atrocious. This was awful. Snooki is just... she's just disgusting. She's a disgusting little troll. And, again, I know that they're going to get a lot of publicity for it. I don't think they're going to get as much publicity at this point as they think they will. I think they've pretty much maxed out on most of the Snooki publicity. Maybe I'm wrong. But she's just this vile little gnome. And I would love to see her get her ass kicked at WrestleMania, although I think we all know that's not going to happen. I think poor Vicky Guerrero is in for a long night. Which leads me to the main event. Rock, Cena, Miz. Which one of these does not belong? I was fine with this, but I would have at least had Miz take out both guys. I mean, the way I envisioned this going down was that you'd have Rock, you'd have Cena, they'd have that magical moment where they come face-to-face in the middle of the ring, a la Rock Hogan, in the build-up to their match back in 2002. And whatever happens, they wouldn't get physical with each other. The Miz would obviously interrupt. One thing would lead to another, and ultimately, Miz would be the last man standing. Cena would be laid out. Rock would be laid out. Miz would be standing tall with the WWE title. And that would at least build some heat on him heading into WrestleMania. And you save the physicality between Rock and Cena for the pay-per-view. Now, I say that, of course, as a fantasy booker, which we are all guilty of, but I will admit that as a fan, I enjoy seeing the two of them mix it up at the end of the show. You know, it was one of those special Raw moments that it'll be replayed in dozens of video packages until the end of time on, you know, Raw's 20th anniversary show, stuff like that. The best part about all this was that it almost guarantees that Cena is eating a rock bottom at WrestleMania. Now, if we didn't have a PG directive, and if Chris Benoit had not killed himself and his family, I'd be hoping right now for a 1999 Royal Rumble-style chair shot whooping, the likes of which The Rock dished out to Mick Foley, but I'll settle for a rock bottom. Basically, Rock came out, and Rock is intense when he's out there. I mean, he's got these big bug eyes, his pupils are just bulging out of his skull. He's sweating bullets. I thought he was having a heart attack at one point when he was in the ring with Cena and then The Miz interrupted. I even noticed he grabbed a water bottle from the outside and had to douse himself with water. I mean, this guy is intense when he's in the zone. And maybe that's the biggest difference between Rock and Cena. You know, maybe Cena is just a different guy. He's intense but has a different way of showing it. But I think part of the problem with Cena, and this was a problem with him at the beginning of the segment, he got more serious as the segment went along, which was good. But the problem with Cena is when he comes out, you know, and it's bad enough that people look at him as the poster child for PG, and so they take out all their anger and frustration on him. But he comes out with that goddamn stupid smirk on his face. And he's always smiling, and he's doing that stupid salute. And it's so grating on the nerves, and it makes it seem like everything is just a joke. Like, this guy, he's so laid back, and he's such a carefree kind of guy. Whereas when The Rock comes out, he just looks like he's out there to just murder somebody. I mean, he's just totally intense, totally ready to whoop some ass. And I think that just sums up the differences between these two guys and why one guy is beloved and the other guy is anything but beloved. And again, Cena got a hugely negative reaction in Chicago. And he made some valid points. I will say this. You know, Cena stood up for himself. He said, you know, I have a lot of kids as fans, and I'm proud of that. I'm not going to apologize for that. At one point, the way he was talking, when he started saying, you know, Rock, I see what's going on here. You don't like me because of the colors I wear and because of the people I hang out with. I thought he was going in a direction that they shouldn't be going in. And thankfully, they didn't go there. I thought he was going to call The Rock a racist, is what I thought. thankfully, which would have made no sense, of course, but they didn't do that. But look, Cena made some valid points, and The Rock didn't really rebut anything that Cena said. All The Rock said after Cena went through that whole diatribe defending himself was basically, I'm going to kick your ass. And before he had a chance to do that, The Miz came out to interrupt. And it just felt like the wind was just sucked out of the arena at that point. People could not possibly care less about Miz being out there. I certainly couldn't. And I would have booked it the same way. Again, make no mistake, Miz coming out and interrupting whatever was about to happen between Rock and Cena is the way that you do this. But again, the Miz has been treated as an afterthought. He's the champion. Think about this for a second. We're heading into the biggest show of the year. We're heading into WrestleMania. Think of the champions that have defended, the champions that have won the title in the history of WrestleMania. Hulk Hogan at his peak. You know, Randy Macho Man Savage. Ultimate Warrior. Bret Hart. I mean, these are men among men. And you've got The Miz, who, when I think back, I try to think back to the last time a defending champion going into WrestleMania was treated as poorly as The Miz has been treated, in spite of the fact that they had him kick Cena's ass at the end of every Raw for about 4 weeks. They tried. They tried to salvage something with The Miz. But to me, it was too late. And I think back to Chris Jericho in 2002. Undisputed champion, undisputed this, undisputed that, undisputed my ass. I mean, it didn't really matter. I mean, Jericho talks about it in his book, his new book. You know, he knows that he was treated like a second-rate citizen. You know, the NWO had just come in. He knew that that WrestleMania was all about Rock Hogan. You know, him and Triple H knew it. And there was nothing they could do about it. And, you know, the extent to which Jericho was being used on TV before that WrestleMania was, he was basically Stephanie McMahon's lackey. You know, he was working with Stephanie and dogs, you know, during Triple H and Stephanie's on-air divorce. It was a joke. And I wouldn't necessarily say it's that bad. We haven't seen any cats or dogs on Raw, but again, The Miz comes out there and him and Alex Riley attack The Rock, and The Rock beats them both up. Now, The Rock can beat up Alex Riley all day long, as well he should. But why is he beating up The Miz? Why is The Miz not getting one over on The Rock? That's why, the way I would have done it, Miz lays both of them out. I mean, even if he needs Alex Riley to help him, even if he has to use, a foreign object. You know, him standing tall over the bodies of Rock and Cena at the end of the show is an image that maybe people don't want to see it, but at least it makes Miz look strong going into the pay-per-view where perhaps he's going to drop the title. But Miz got beat up. He got DDT'd by The Rock. I cringed a little bit when The Rock botched the kip-up, but the guy hasn't really done anything physical in about 6 or 7 years, so I'll cut him some slack. Did the people's elbow. Miz popped up. It's almost like the way The Rock used to sell the stunner. Remember the Royal Rumble, I think it was, in 98 when Austin gave Rock the stunner, and Rock didn't go down. He just popped right up so that Austin can throw him out of the ring. And Rock tosses Miz out of the ring. Cena sneaks in like the sneaky little bastard he is. A heel at heart, John Cena is. And he picks up Rock, gives him the attitude adjustment. And at that exact moment, I couldn't help, I mean, based on the reaction he got, I think that's as close to a John Cena heel turn as we're ever going to get. And by the way, for the people who have asked, you know, if this is a real heel turn, is this going to be the start of a heel turn for Cena? That, I don't know where they're going with this, but that was not a heel turn, unfortunately. But it sure felt like one, and we knew who the people were cheering for at the end of that segment. Rock sold it like $1 million. They even put video up on the WWE website. It's probably on YouTube, of after the show went off the air, Rock leaving the ring, selling the pain from the attitude adjustment, which is hard to do because, again, the attitude adjustment is really nothing more than a glorified fireman's carry takeover, let's be honest. But Rock did his part perfectly fine. Cena did his part fine. Miz, you know, for what it was, did his part fine. And now it presents an interesting situation because now you've had John Cena get physical first with The Rock. And unless The Rock is going to be made to look like a pussy, The Rock has to get his revenge. How does this factor into the outcome of this match? That's the question. Apparently, the Raw rating came in, popped a 3.8, which was up from the 3.3 that it was down to last week. I don't know what the very end of the show did. I'm very interested to see. I know the second hour of Raw did over a 4, which is, by modern-day Raw standards, that's absolutely huge. I'd be curious to know what the last 15, 20 minutes of the show did. To me, you're probably looking at a 4.3, 4.4. People are into this. I mean, everybody can give their own personal example. You know, my best friend, me and him became friends in high school because of our mutual love of wrestling. And, you know, now these days he doesn't really pay too much attention to it. You know, we're friends and we talk about almost everything except wrestling. But the last couple of weeks since The Rock came back, you know, a lot of our discussion has been about The Rock. And it's been about Raw. Oh, well, you know, I caught part of Raw this week. And, you know, why is Michael Cole sitting in a glass box? And you know, things like that. So, say what you want to, but The Rock has brought back, at least for a couple of weeks, some old-school wrestling fans. You know, he has reinvigorated the product. And I don't know how much longer it's going to last for. You know, maybe after WrestleMania, it dies a death and things go back to the way they were. But he has, you know, The Rock tells people all the time that he electrifies and this and that. And, you know, obviously it's a great expression. It's a great catchphrase. But he truly has electrified the product over the last couple of weeks. Like, again, another sellout crowd in Chicago last night. Hot crowd, too. Felt almost like an Attitude Era crowd, in fact. Lots of signs, just lots of emotion back and forth. It was really fun to watch the show last night. And I think it's going to be a fun WrestleMania as well. And it just opens up a whole litany of questions, especially now that Rock has teased that he might be open to wrestling another match. He has not said that he will wrestle again, but he certainly has not denied that he would wrestle again. So that takes us to WrestleMania, the big show. 27th installment of WrestleMania, this Sunday from the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. I would imagine they'll probably announce a crowd somewhere between 70 and 80,000 people. I don't know what the actual capacity is for the Georgia Dome. I'm sure it's not 80,000, but that never stopped them from announcing that number before. Celebrities on the show. Obviously, The Rock will be there. He's a celebrity. Snooki, unfortunately, will be there. Snoop Dogg will be at WrestleMania. He was also, I think, at WrestleMania 24, if I'm not mistaken. Recording artist Kerry Hilson will be singing America the Beautiful. So that should put to rest the Justin Bieber rumors of him, a Canadian, singing America the Beautiful. That never really did make any sense. Drew Carey, I assume, will be at WrestleMania since he's going into the Hall of Fame the night before. And they haven't announced anything. I'm still of the impression that Bob Barker is going to be at WrestleMania. I mean, WWE made the announcement. You know, they themselves, on their website, many, many, many weeks ago, announced that Bob Barker would be at WrestleMania. And they haven't said anything about him since. And I am of the impression that he will probably be inducting Drew Carey into the Hall of Fame at the Phillips Arena on Saturday night. And so perhaps Bob Barker will appear at the pay-per-view as well. Maybe they'll use him in some sort of backstage segment. But there will be a big celebrity presence at WrestleMania this Sunday. So then we have the card. We have 9 matches in the lineup so far. They could add something at the last minute. Wouldn't surprise me if they had a battle royal. I don't know if it would be a dark match before the show. Maybe it'll be, you know, maybe they could add one to start the pay-per-view. You know, they did that at WrestleMania 24. They added a battle royal. It was, I think, a pre-show dark match that Kane won. That was when he then beat Chavo Guerrero to win the ECW title on the pay-per-view in like 10 seconds or something ridiculous like that. You know, I hope that somebody like Kofi Kingston would find a spot on this show. Again, he deserves to be in that 8-man tag. He's had an issue with Wade Barrett in the core. And, I mean, come on. Vladimir Kozlov, Kofi Kingston. Can't somebody, like, jump Kozlov or something backstage so Kofi can take his spot? I don't know. Hopefully he'll find a spot somewhere on the show. But as of right now, he's not on there. We have Rey Mysterio and Cody Rhodes. Is a singles match at WrestleMania. I think I've mentioned on the show before, Mysterio went to management. He requested this match. He actually wanted to face Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. Apparently he likes Cody. Felt that he deserved to be in a big match, or I guess a semi-big match on the show. And let's be honest, Cody Rhodes should be thanking Rey Mysterio profusely right now, because were it not for this feud, I mean, where would he fit into the show? Nowhere. Cody Rhodes would not be on the WrestleMania card were it not for Rey Mysterio. So, to me, Cody Rhodes has a lot to prove here. I think he's pretty good. I think he can be bigger than he is. He's got a lot to prove in this match. You know, he's never been in a bigger match his entire career. You know, he was at WrestleMania last year in a triple threat against DiBiase and Orton. But this is different. This is one-on-one with Rey Mysterio, one of the biggest stars in the company. And his own program, all by himself. Hopefully this stuff over the last couple of weeks where he's had more of a mean streak is the end of this whole dashing gimmick, because, you know, dashing is entertaining enough, but dashing is not going to get him anywhere higher than the mid-card. And so hopefully that's the end of that whole gimmick. I'm still predicting that Mysterio goes over here. I'm sure that he'll do everything to make Cody look good, but I just can't see Cody getting a clean win over Mysterio, so I'm going with Rey in this match. We have the core, Wade Barrett, Ezekiel Jackson, Heath Slater, and Justin Gabriel against Santino Marella, Vladimir Kozlov, Kane, and The Big Show. To me, you know, the babyfaces beat the piss out of the core on Raw. Logic would dictate that the core would get that win back. They would be made to look strong at the pay-per-view. I mean, after all, you've got the Intercontinental title is in the fold with Wade Barrett. Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel are the tag team champions. I believe they are. But I have a difficult time seeing Kane, Big Show, and Santino losing. So, I'm going to go with the core. They need that win back. I think what happened on Raw sets that up, I hope. So I'm going to go with the core in that match. Sheamus defending the championship of the United States against the former champion Daniel Bryan. This is really cool in that it's Daniel Bryan's very first WrestleMania match. And, as somebody who watched Bryan Danielson at several Ring of Honor shows here in New York, and I even posted the picture on my Facebook in the Secret Files photo gallery, so you have to be a Facebook friend to see that photo, so you can Facebook me at facebook.com/thesolomonster. There's a photo up in that gallery that I snapped with my crappy little disposable camera. This was back, this was probably back in 2006, I want to say. It was the very last Ring of Honor show from the New Yorker Hotel, which is actually literally just around the corner from the Manhattan Center and the Hammerstein Ballroom, where they now have many of their shows. And the main event was a triple threat match. It was Bryan Danielson, Samoa Joe, and Kenta from Japan. And there was one spot in the match, I think Kenta and Joe, I know Samoa Joe was on the outside because he's in the photo, catching Danielson. Danielson did this leap. He leapt up to the top rope and springboarded himself. He did like a somersault into the crowd right in front of me. He almost killed me. Fucking bastard almost killed me that night. And I look at that photo and I kind of laugh now, you know, seeing him on TV every week in WWE, you know, made it to the big time. I think that's a really cool feeling. And for him to get that WrestleMania match, to me, is pretty special. Now, that being said, Sheamus just won the U.S. title. Sheamus is coming off an embarrassing losing streak. Now he's on something of a winning streak, even though this winning streak really is only comprised of victories over Evan Bourne and maybe one other person. But it's a winning streak all the same. And so, that being said, I don't see the title switching back so quickly to Daniel Bryan. I'm going to go with Sheamus in this match. This is another match, much like Orton and Punk, by the way, that I think has the potential to really, I don't want to say steal the show necessarily, but it could end up as being one of the better matches of the night. John Morrison, Trish Stratus, and Snooki against Dolph Ziggler and Lay Cool with Vicky Guerrero in their corner. I don't see any other outcome here other than Team Snooki getting the victory, and obviously Vicky Guerrero being attacked or embarrassed in some way, so I'm going to go with Morrison, Trish, and Snooki, as I assume most people would. Randy Orton and CM Punk should be a pretty good match. I'm actually looking forward to this match. All the members of Nexus, as I mentioned earlier, have been picked off one by one over the last month by Orton. I don't know that that means we wouldn't see a Nexus presence at the pay-per-view. Maybe they would run out there. I mean, look, we all know stipulations don't mean shit anyway. I mean, if Nexus comes out there, what the hell's going to happen to them? They're going to be fired? Does anybody take firing stipulations and firing threats seriously these days? But that being said, I don't expect Nexus to be there. And I would expect Randy Orton is going over in this match. I mean, Punk was made to look really, really strong this week. Orton is the valiantly fighting babyface with the bum leg. And not only do I think Orton wins, I think Orton wins and he punts CM Punk. That's what I think. We've got Michael Cole with Jack Swagger in his corner against Jerry the King Lawler, Stone Cold Steve Austin as the guest referee for absolutely no reason other than to promote Tough Enough and just add another big name to the WrestleMania roster. This is the match, perhaps, that I'm most looking forward to on the entire show. This is the match that has been the best promoted match over the last couple of months. Michael Cole, love him or hate him, I mean, he's a very polarizing personality. As an announcer, he's awful when you compare him to somebody like Jim Ross. It's awful that they've taken Michael Cole, who is their play-by-play guy, and turned him into a heel. And he has been a phenomenal heel, don't get me wrong. But the problem is that your primary play-by-play guy should not be your heel. People do not take him seriously. People will not look at him as a credible personality. And it doesn't really do you any favors when your primary play-by-play guy goes on Twitter and calls somebody a faggot. That's also not a good thing. But again, having said all of that, Michael Cole has taken his role as heel very seriously, and he has done a phenomenal job with it. If Michael Cole were ultimately to be revealed as the anonymous Raw general manager, I think he would be perfect in the role. If Michael Cole wanted to be a manager, like old school Jimmy Hart, he could be phenomenal. In this role, it was tailor-made for somebody like him. And Jerry Lawler has played his role to perfection. Lawler has waited a long time for this WrestleMania match. I think I've told the story before. He's told the story before, going to Vince McMahon year after year to tell him, you know, I've never had a match at WrestleMania. And then Vince would feign this, or maybe Vince really didn't realize. He would be, oh my God, that can't possibly be true. And he would turn to the writers and say, we got to get a match for this man this year. And then, of course, it would never happen. Not because McMahon was doing it on purpose, but, you know, Vince just would forget. Or, let's be honest, you know, Jerry Lawler was not his priority when it comes to WrestleMania. And they really did strike gold with the storyline in that you've had Cole and Lawler as broadcast partners now since 2008. And this bad blood between them has been brewing for, I don't even know, maybe the last 6 months? 8 months? Long time. And long enough that, again, people really care about this match. They want to see Michael Cole dismembered. Not just beat up. They want to see Michael Cole dismembered at WrestleMania. And they've done everything in their power to make you believe that Michael Cole is going to get his comeuppance at this pay-per-view. He's in there against Jerry Lawler, an experienced veteran. Steve Austin is the guest referee, and I cannot envision a scenario ever where Steve Austin would count the three for Michael Cole. I just cannot envision any scenario like that. They're basically telling you Michael Cole is losing this match, and he is going to have his ass kicked. And I love it, because as predictable as it might be, that's the only outcome that could possibly take place here at WrestleMania. And I would gladly pay my money to see Michael Cole get his ass kicked. Wouldn't shock me either if Eve, for example, the former women's champion, or is she still the women's? Maybe she's still the women's champion. I don't know who the women's champion is. There's no women's title match at WrestleMania, but if they had Eve and maybe some of the other divas come out, because Cole has disrespected them on TV the last several weeks. You know, he called Natalya fat all those weeks ago. He's been interrupting Eve's matches on the TV show, her match against Maryse, her other match against Alicia Fox. Perhaps during the match or after the match, they'll have the divas come out and beat up Michael Cole as well. Everybody should beat up Michael Cole. All of us should be allowed to beat up Michael Cole. If you have a ticket to the show, I got to talk to Webmaster Mike and Noah about this. I don't know where they're sitting in the Georgia Dome, but you know what? If you pay good money to be in the arena that night, you should be. They should have a revolving line, and you should be allowed to come down to the ring, step into the ring, and just punch Michael Cole square in the face. I think that would be phenomenal. They could do it like TNA does. Wait until the show is over. You know, TNA has their wrestlers pose for Polaroids for $20 a pop in the ring after most of their house shows. Now, granted, you're talking about house shows with maybe 500 people, 1,000 people, not 75,000 in the Georgia Dome, so I could see where this might be a little unrealistic, but, you know, maybe is a little attraction after the show. Charge people $50 a pop, come in the ring, and punch Michael Cole in the mouth. Anyway, Lawler is winning this match. There can be no other outcome. I guess the only real question is, what involvement, if any, will Jim Ross have in all this? I have not heard anything this week about Jim Ross announcing on the pay-per-view, which makes me believe that your announce team this Sunday will consist of Josh Matthews, Matt Stryker, and Booker T. Which, yikes. I don't really know what to say about that. I'm hoping Jim Ross is going to have the opportunity to at least call that match. I mean, even if he doesn't call any other match on the pay-per-view, you would think at least let him announce for that one match. But I don't know. You know, people thought he would announce last year, and Vince McMahon said no. He'll be there. Jim Ross is going to be at the Access events this week. He'll be at the Hall of Fame. He'll be at WrestleMania as a guest. And I guess we'll see if Vince McMahon has a change of heart. I hope he does. Edge, with Christian in his corner, defending the World Heavyweight title against Alberto Del Rio, who will have Brodus Clay, Jobber to the Stars, in his corner. Del Rio has claimed for weeks now, for months, that it is his destiny to leave WrestleMania the World Heavyweight Champion. I've heard nothing over the last couple of weeks other than Del Rio is winning the title. Del Rio is winning the title. I don't know that the outcome of this match has ever been in doubt. So, which is not to say that they wouldn't have Edge hold on to the title, maybe in a swerve, but I'm going with Alberto in this match. They've done a very good job, more so with him than with anybody else, as far as all the new guys are concerned, of building up a real new main event guy. They did it with Sheamus before they completely buried him after the King of the Ring. Hopefully they don't do the same with Del Rio. If they do another King of the Ring tournament later this year and Del Rio finds himself in the bracket, he should just automatically take himself out of the tournament, because winning King of the Ring apparently will do you no favors. But Del Rio has been pushed like a main event guy. You know, he won the Royal Rumble. His first night in fact, on SmackDown. Big win over Rey Mysterio. They've really gotten that submission armbar over. They've done everything right with this guy. And, you know, to me, it just makes sense to put the title on him. And the only question is, does Christian turn on Edge? Or does Christian perhaps inadvertently cost Edge the title? That causes friction between the two of them. So you can have an Edge-Christian feud without either one of them being a heel. I mean, you could go a multitude of different ways with this. I'll just go ahead and say that Christian is going to cost Edge the match on purpose, and Del Rio walks away with the title. Miz, John Cena, WWE Championship. What role will The Rock play? Well, nobody knows. He's not the referee. He's not the ring announcer. He's not the timekeeper. He's the host. Obviously, Rock is going to either be at ringside for the match. He will interfere in the match. The Rock will not let John Cena go unpunished. And in fact, on his Twitter earlier today, The Rock said, not even God can save John Cena from the ass-whipping or the ass-kicking that he has coming to him at WrestleMania this Sunday. The Rock is pissed. He wants his revenge on Barney the Dinosaur this Sunday, and it's just a matter of, Does revenge come in the form of costing Cena the title? Or does revenge come in the form of attacking Cena after he has already won the championship? Because Miz is not going to beat Cena clean. I think we all know that. The only way Miz gets out of WrestleMania with the title is if The Rock interferes, and either interferes on purpose to cost Cena the match, or if The Rock interferes and doesn't necessarily want to cost Cena the match, but it inadvertently leads to Cena losing the match. You know, I'm not so sure that Cena is walking out with the title. I'm not as sure of that as I was, you know, 2 months ago when we knew that it would be Cena and Miz. I mean, I don't know that there was anybody in the world that at that time believed Miz was going to leave with the belt. But if this match does not go on last, all of a sudden you don't have to worry about having a happy-go-lucky ending to this match. You can keep the title on Miz and build up some more animosity between Rock and Cena. So I'm not even going to try to nail down exactly what they're going to do. I want them to surprise me. I'm looking forward to seeing what they have in store. I'm going to go ahead and say that Miz retains the WWE Championship. Miz does not have to lose the title this Sunday. If they want, they can make him lose the title to Cena next month at Extreme Rules or whatever the next pay-per-view is. But I'm going to say that Miz gets a stay of execution. He will retain his title. The Rock will cost John Cena the championship. And where they go from there, I have no fucking idea. Again, are they going to do Rock versus Cena? Yes or no? I don't know. I would think they are. If they do it, when are they going to do it? Are they going to do it at SummerSlam? Are they going to set up a match for... I hear people saying, oh, they're going to set up a match for WrestleMania 28 in Miami, The Rock's hometown. And that's all well and good, but 12 months is a long time to wait. A little too long, in my opinion. You know, maybe you could get away with that 20 years ago. Although even then, a year is a long time. But they did it with Hogan and Savage. I mean, think about that. You know, Hogan and Savage, the mega powers, that was one of the best storylines in company history. You know, it kicked off in mid-87, late 87, when the two of them united as one. And they were wrestling tag team matches. They were a unit. And slowly you started to see cracks in the you know, chinks in the armor, so to speak. And WrestleMania 4, Savage won the championship in the tournament with help from Hogan. Savage held the title for a year, in fact, but they continued to build, you know, little things here and there. Savage would be jealous of Hogan hugging Liz, and, you know, all these, they played that whole thing to perfection. And supposedly that whole storyline was the brainchild of Elizabeth, or so the legend has it. But basically that was a match that was built up from one WrestleMania to the next, and they did a phenomenal job with it. One of the best builds to a WrestleMania main event ever, top five. But that was 1988, you know, into 89. That was a long time ago. That was over 20 years ago. You didn't have Raw every week that had to be must-see TV. You didn't have the internet back then. Things were very, very different. Could the fans wait 1 year? Would the fans still be as hot for Rock Cena in 2012 as they are right now? I don't know. That's a risk. You know, you risk burning out the biggest storyline and the biggest potential money match that you have available to you if you wait too long. SummerSlam? That would make more sense. At least it's the same calendar year. You know, SummerSlam is a long ways away, but it's not as long as WrestleMania next year. So all this depends on whether or not The Rock is going to wrestle again. You know, his interviews and his comments of late would lead me to believe that he is. They're not going to do Rock Cena at Extreme Rules, because if they did, well, I mean, that's a level of stupidity that even I don't think WWE is capable of. So, we'll see. We'll see where they go with it. But I'm going to go for now with Miz retaining the title. Rock costs Cena the belt. We know Rock's going to be on Raw next week. They announced that a couple of weeks ago, actually, that Rock would be there. And I assume that after Rock costs him the championship, there'll be some follow-up the next night. And then we have Undertaker and Triple H. No holds barred. This is the official, I guess, or maybe unofficial main event of WrestleMania this year. A match that I didn't have much of an interest in it all until that great segment from Raw last night that just completely changed the face of this whole feud. I mean, it just injected something that it was sorely lacking. And some people have said that, you know, the seeds of doubt have been planted in their minds. Perhaps the Undertaker streak is in jeopardy this Sunday. To me, that's the beauty of wrestling right there, because there's absolutely no way the Undertaker streak is ending. I just refuse to believe it. But the fact that you can still convince people, even against a guy like Triple H, who already lost once to the Undertaker. Triple H has absolutely nothing to gain by beating the Undertaker. Triple H, I think, on his own DVD, way back when, said that the streak should not end when he was interviewed about it. The streak ain't ending, people. It's not happening. But the fact that people can still believe is fantastic. And I applaud WWE for that, you know? I mean, to me, the seeds of doubt with me were planted with Shawn Michaels, which was a testament to the phenomenal job they did building up that first match between him and Undertaker, and even the match last year. But I just didn't think they were going to be able to do that with Triple H. And some people think that Taker is going to lose, so apparently they've done a pretty good job of that. I still say that Shawn Michaels, there's going to be that one spot in the match where perhaps he'll tease attacking Hunter. He'll end up kicking Undertaker. Undertaker will lead a super kick. It'll lead to a near fall. Triple H has been pedigreeing people through a table. He did it to Sheamus. Did it to Ted DiBiase. So I'm sure at some point that will come into play as a spot in the match. Perhaps Undertaker will reverse it and backdrop him through the table. I guess we'll see. But in the end, Undertaker goes 19-0. I know I'm not really going out on much of a limb here, but I am in fact going with the Undertaker at WrestleMania. Stop the presses. But there you go. That's your WrestleMania card. I would say of all the WrestleMania predictions I've done for the shows the last couple of years, this probably, if you look at the top four or five matches on this show, to me, sitting here right now, is probably the most predictable WrestleMania card. And you know what? If every single one of my predictions were to come true, which is absolutely not going to happen, but if they were, I would be okay with that, because again, sometimes predictability is good. And again, in the case of Cole and Lawler, Cole should not win that match. It's okay if Jerry Lawler wins. You know, The Undertaker, the streak should not end. As predictable as that may be, it's okay if The Undertaker wins. There's still doubt. There's still doubt with Miz and Cena, so at least you got that going for it. But I think they've done a pretty good job building WrestleMania up as something special. You know, they brought back a lot of stars from the Attitude Era. They've got a celebrity presence at the pay-per-view. It's going to be a great atmosphere, 60, 70, 75,000 people in the Georgia Dome. The Hall of Famers will be there. Don't forget the night before, Shawn Michaels being inducted into the Hall of Fame. One thing I forgot to mention, actually, during my Raw review a little bit earlier, was that the Road Warriors were announced as being inducted into the Hall of Fame. They will be going in along with their former manager, Paul Ellering. And hopefully, nobody, hopefully, will make any mention whatsoever of Rocco the Hand Puppet. We can just forget that ever happened. But that was a really badass video package they put together for the Road Warriors on Raw Monday night. So they and Shawn Michaels are the primary, I guess you would say, inductees. And then classes rounded out by Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Sonny, Bullet Bob Armstrong, and Abdullah the Butcher. So that's your, and of course, Drew Carey, of course, how could I forget? And that's your class of 2011. So don't forget, the Hall of Fame airs not on Saturday night this year. It airs next Monday. That's going to be ridiculous. You've got Chris Jericho on Dancing with the Stars, for those who actually care. I know a lot of you don't care, but you do have that. And you're going to have the Hall of Fame on USA from 8 to 9. You've got Raw from 9 to 11. And the debut of Tough Enough at 11:05 next Monday night. Every week thereafter, Tough Enough will air before Raw. And I think they might air a replay immediately after Raw, which is all well and good. Again, except for those of us who may not be able to watch Tough Enough before Raw every week. So if, let's say, you avoid Tough Enough at 8 o'clock with the expectation that you'll watch Raw at 9 and then just watch Tough Enough afterwards, just keep in mind that what they will probably end up doing during the course of Raw each week is airing a commercial that spoils it for you. You know, they'll air a commercial, being that Tough Enough will have already aired, and they'll air a commercial that hypes the following week's episode. So that could turn out to be a little bit tricky. But for at least the first week, it airs after Raw. So the big, big night of wrestling coming up next Monday. So that should be a good time. One last piece of news here from the day, which is kind of sad and kind of frustrating, really, if you think about it. WWE released Dave Finley yesterday. He had been working backstage as an agent since 2001. This is Finley from TV, of course, Hornswoggle's father. And as the story goes, the Miz was booked to interrupt the national anthem during a house show in Illinois over the weekend. And he cut a promo setting up a match against Randy Orton to open the show. And apparently there were representatives for the National Guard in attendance. And of course, the National Guard is a big-time sponsor for WWE. And WWE is very big into the troops and all that kind of stuff. And the National Guard people were very upset with WWE for using the anthem to get heel heat. So when WWE found out, the decision was made to release Finley, who had been in charge of that entire show, and so therefore he bore the responsibility of what happened, and he was excommunicated from the company. So it was surprising to hear that, and again, I said frustrating because it's one of those things where I don't understand why you have to fire somebody over that. You know, there was no malice involved. I don't even think there was any great deal of negligence involved. Was it a little, was it a little disrespectful for them to use the anthem in that way with National Guardsmen in attendance? Yeah, you can make that argument, although it is wrestling. But apparently, again, the National Guard got upset. They're a big sponsor. WWE has to be very careful with these things. Would the National Guard really care if WWE announced that they had indefinitely suspended Finley, if they had fined him a large sum of money and suspended him maybe for 2 weeks or punished him in some other meaningful way? Was the only real outcome here to terminate the poor guy? I mean, he's been working for your company for 10 years. He was universally well-liked by everybody backstage. He was credited a lot with working a great deal with the Divas over the years to help them improve. I don't understand why you have to fire somebody over that. Especially, you know, in this case, on a case-by-case basis, Dave Finley is not a guy who you ever really hear anything bad about. You know, he doesn't cause problems. He's actually very well respected, and a lot of people look up to him backstage. So I think this was an overreaction. I think that you could have punished him in some other way. You know, and I think that would have satisfied the National Guard's people and showed them that you're serious about taking action. All the same, you didn't have to fire the poor guy. Now, you know, they fired Daniel Bryan. I mean, that whole situation is just... I'm not going to get into that again, but we all know what happened last year. And it created just a huge firestorm. And a couple of months later, in fact, within 2 months, Daniel Bryan was rehired and he was in the main event of SummerSlam. So this doesn't mean that Finley can't be brought back in a couple of months, but I just don't think there was a need to fire him in the first place. I said before he was credited with working with the Divas a lot. And, he may have helped a lot of them out, let's say 5-6 years ago, but you could probably count the number of, quote, great women wrestlers on the roster on one hand since that time. I mean, I wouldn't lay blame at his feet for that. When you consider the, you know, WWE's hiring practices in recent years when it comes to the Divas. But yeah, they haven't exactly had a lot of Diva success stories in the last couple of years. Anyway, WWE basically retired him as an on-air performer last year because they wanted to go younger. That's the story. Finley was taken off TV as a character because the company thought he was too old, and they wanted to go in a younger direction. Because, you know, Finley was taking up so much TV time from people. We just had to get rid of the guy. I also find this hilarious, by the way, when you consider that last night's Raw was basically built around The Undertaker, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, The Rock, and 61-year-old Jerry the King Lawler.
amazing.
Hypocrisy at its finest. Don't forget, SEScoops.com is the place to be this weekend. In fact, all week long, Webmaster Mike and Noah Mark will be in Atlanta for the festivities, the Hall of Fame, WrestleMania, and a bunch of other stuff. And they'll be sending updates and tweeting photos and all that other cool stuff to the website. But the coup de grace, if you will, is on Sunday night, 7 Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, live WrestleMania coverage on SEScoops.com, courtesy of yours truly, the Solo Monster. You can watch WrestleMania along with me. I will be posting the results of the show as it progresses and giving some of my thoughts as well. The comments section should be open underneath the post, so you can all leave your feedback there during the show. It should be a good time. So definitely keep your browser on SC Scoops all throughout the week for WrestleMania coverage. You can email me, as always, at thesolomonster@gmail.com. No mailbag this week. We'll get back to that on the next show. Twitter.com/Solomonster, Facebook.com/TheSolomonster, and you can subscribe to this very podcast via iTunes. Don't have a panic attack. It is free. It does not cost you anything. Being that I did this extra bonus show this week, probably not going to be a new sound off this weekend. I mentioned on the last show that there might not be anyway. Unless I do a show on Saturday, it doesn't make any sense to do one on Sunday with WrestleMania being on Sunday, so the likelihood of another show this weekend is, well, it's unlikely. So probably the following weekend I'll be back with episode 154. But if that changes, I will update you on Twitter and Facebook as I always do. So again, enjoy WrestleMania if you're going to watch the pay-per-view. Should be a good time. Should be a fun show. And if you're watching it, if you're not watching it, watch along with me this Sunday, 7 Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here on SEScoops.com. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.